Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 177 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I am, well, Al, and I am joined by Anton. Hello, Anton.
Hello, Alistair. How has life been treating you?
Life has been treating me quite well this week, generally speaking. Yeah, I've been down in Edinburgh. I've been all over the place. It's been quite a good and busy week on the whole. I'm afraid we're not joined by Mike again tonight. Tonight, actually, Mike is performing for Elton John, which is quite impressive, except for the fact that it's not the rock star, pop star, mega star that everyone knows Elton John. It's a bloke six doors down whose name just happens to be Elton John, and Mike is standing in his front room currently doing a gig because I think there was a bit of confusion went on when he accepted that particular one. But you know what? It keeps him busy and off the streets, so I'm not arguing.
Yeah, thankfully at least Elton John Jr. is having the best sixth birthday party of his life. And meanwhile, while that's happening, we're going to have one of the best podcasts of our lives. That's maybe a little bit of hyperbole, but nevertheless, we had quite an exciting week for Nintendo Switch.
We really did. I mean, there was a direct that it didn't come out of nowhere. We were expecting it. But it came with the Nintendo's usual short notice, so I couldn't join you guys. You guys did a direct special on it, which I listened to the next day when I was driving down to Edinburgh. You did a very good job, by the way.
Why, thank you. You know, usually the direct specials are just an incredibly fun way to kind of do a deeper dive on all the new announcements. But especially on this occurrence, we really needed a Nintendo Direct special because it was over an hour of diving into all the content that they let loose on us on that faithful day.
Yeah, but I mean, it was an hour of content, but it was about 20 minutes of games that weren't RPGs or farming simulators. In fact, maybe even less than that. There were so many RPGs and farming simulators. It was just, they kept giving wave upon wave upon wave. But I mean, you guys talked about this in the Direct. I made my thoughts known via text message to Mike while you were recording the Direct special, so we probably don't need to cover it in too much depth, and we will go through a little abridged version of the Direct in the main episode anyway, covering the things that weren't all the farming simulators and all of the RPGs. But it does beg the question, Anton, in amongst this busy week of announcements, have you had any time to game?
Oh, a little. As per always, I am chipping through Rogue Legacy 2. absolutely loving it. I made slightly less progress. I'm now level 151, or rank 151, however they describe it. I thought I'd beaten a boss, but it turns out I'd gotten just particularly far in it and then had skipped ahead. Because you can do the bosses in any order you want. But there's kind of, you know, incrementally they're all harder, so I'd thought I'd beaten one that was a lot easier and then went on and tried to take on one that was much tougher, not realizing that I had a much easier boss that I could have been fighting. So it's kind of slowed down my progress, but god, it's I have to be good at video games now, apparently. It's a high bar.
Or you can do what most people do, get stuck and give up.
I am putting a lot of hours into this game. I won't lie, I'm craving something a little bit new. So I either need to get better or move on. How about yourself, Alistair?
I have been thinking, well, you've been sounding a bit like me recently. I go through phases where people ask, what have you been playing? And I say the same game every single week. And you must have said this for the last 4 or 5 weeks. You're turning to me. You're actually playing a game in depth for a long time.
Yeah, and it's weird because I've done two like in-depth games in a row. Usually it's quite sporadic that a game just hooks me, but I've had two in a row in the form of Rogue Legacy and then Sonic Lost Worlds, so who knows, lucky three. Going to be
indeed. Well, on the Switch I have actually played a game. I started a new one today with Sun. Technically it's not a new game, it's not even new to my library. I bought this maybe about two and a half years ago, and I did try and play it with the Sprog, but he was a bit too young. But because he's been playing Lego Star Wars on the iPad, he has an idea of how the Star Wars games work. Because he's been playing Kirby on the Switch, he now knows how to control things with sticks and buttons and do all that stuff. So we went back and started replaying Lego Jurassic World again. And we sat down yesterday, we completed all of the first movie in the space of yesterday and today, and we started on the second movie in it. So you go and you do the whole Jurassic Park, and then you go into Jurassic World. And we're having a ball, I have to say. It's been a while since I've played a Lego game on a console, really. I forgot how much fun they are. They're just simple and good and amusing. So yeah, we did that a lot yesterday and today.
Incredible. I must say, as somebody that's not seen the Star Wars movies, the Star Wars, the new Lego Star Wars game does look really, really good. So I highly recommend if you get through this one, maybe delve into that one because that looks like a whole new bar beyond what's been done
Yeah,
before.
Skywalker Saga does look like it's raised the bar, so that we might well dive into that one next. And speaking of diving in, we should probably dive into the news because we have a lot to talk about.
Tell us that people want to know.
Our first story this week is that Insert Disc 5 has announced InStars and Time for the Nintendo Switch, published by Armor Game Studio. It's a party-based RPG about being stuck in a time loop, coming out in 2023, and this one does look particularly different. Time loops aren't really a new feature of games. There've been in quite a few of them before, but this one's got enough little tweaks and kinks to it that you think, oh, this is new, and visually, it's kind of different as well. It's all very black and white and looking incredibly frustrating but funny, Anton.
Indeed, this is dripping in charm. It has a good selection of LGBT characters. I'm really loving the kind of elevated Undertale-esque aesthetic that they've kind of went for here in terms of the black and white aesthetic and slightly more crude pixel art. I'm very charmed by this, and I think the idea of the time loop is quite intriguing. I'm very much impressed by it, and the characters in the world feels fleshed out and interesting. I'm quite intrigued by the title they've put together here.
Yeah, you just have to be willing to die a lot, because by the look of it, the whole premise of this game is you're in a time loop of a day repeats itself, and you die. And you figure out how to not die, and you do it again. You get a bit further, and you die. And you figure out how to not die, and you do it again, and again, and again. I presume each day is slightly different, otherwise the game would get very, very boring. But effectively, that's kind of the main premise, and I don't dislike that, to be honest. And the fact that you can die in so many interesting ways, when you watch the trailer, one of the things that comes up saying, you slipped in a banana skin and died. Another one, you choked on a slice of pineapple and died. There's all these things, and it looks possibly like when the more you die, the more beat up you get when you come back, I think. But we've not seen enough of the mechanics to really be able to flesh that out. What I do quite like is the battle system is rock, paper, scissors. Don't think I've seen that in a game before.
You know, cut through the monotony of having to go through menus and wait in your turn. Rock, paper, scissors, rapid fire. I love it. I guess it's technically random chance, so that might not be fun, but I like the boldness of it.
It's doing something different and we applaud it. Next up, Repixel 8 and CGA Studio Games have announced Formula Retro Racing World Tour. I think I said that right. For the Nintendo Switch, it's a polygonal F1 racer coming out on the 14th of December. It's basically the latest in a long line of these games. This is an existing franchise, isn't it? The retro racing franchise.
Indeed, there have been a couple of them. I believe this is a third entry on it. And as, if you imagine, I guess, Virtual Racer, Daytona USA sort of era gaming, it is another in those sort of homages. And although the quality and the charm is there, I feel like we have seen this done very many times. And I guess this is a successor, so of course it's been done to a degree. But I'm becoming a little bit jaded in terms of these retro racing throwbacks. How are you feeling?
I can't really disagree with you. I mean, I watched this and thought, oh, it reminds me of like a Dreamcast type thing or a kind of thing I would have played in the arcades. And it looks fine. It looks absolutely fine. But I genuinely, watching the trailer, thought, who sits down in a planning meeting and goes, you know what, let's create an arcade racer because no one else has done that before. And let's make it polygonal because no one else has done that before. And let's just make it a little bit, I mean, it's not beige visually, but it just has, it strikes me as being a bit of a beige game. Having said that, they do say that they focus on simplicity. The game itself is supposed to be very, very simple, pick up and play type gameplay. But the more you play it, the more you get the nuances, as with many of these racing games. But it doesn't do anything to excite me. We've seen so many really, really good racing games come out recently across all platforms, the Switch included, and this one's going to have to really work hard to even meet the same level. And I don't know who honestly thinks it's a really good idea to go and make these games, because they can't be particularly profitable. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody's going to go and buy this. Maybe this is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah, to be honest, I guess when you're at a certain scale of indie developer, you know, you're making games that you personally either love or are, you know, technically you found a way that encourages you to go make them. So I imagine there's not the most market research behind it, but, you know, I hope it works out because I imagine there's a lot of talented people putting this all together.
I hope so. Let's face it, games designers are generally wonderful people and we appreciate the fact they exist. Interceptor Entertainment has announced the Rise of the Triad Ludicrous edition for the Nintendo Switch, published by Apogee Entertainment. This is an old-school first-person shooter from the 1990s that has been brought kicking and screaming into the 2020s, and it looks gorgeous and funny and hilarious, Anton.
Indeed. They've done a clever job with the package here. It is very much of the Quake, Daikatana, and Doom 2 era. It is, you know, just, you know, old-school shooter. Duke Nukem in there, and I thought any kind of games from that era coming back have got a bit of a tough show to follow up, because Doom 1 and 2, Doom 64 and Quake are just such quintessential value propositions on the eShop. They're just so cheap that it would have a tough job, but the sense of humour and the ludicrousness, to use the title they've given, they've added to this collection here, does make it stand out. It's going to be a tough one to get people over the price if it is more than these other ones, which I predict it shall be. But overall, I think they've done a nice tidy package here, and it's not a game from the 90s I'm familiar with, Al.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a Wolfenstein sequel era, and it looks like a Wolfenstein game, but I think it was a lot of the same people, or I mean, it's very, very much inspired by it. But yeah, many, many explosions, lots of over-the-top stupidity. It's exactly what you'd expect from a shooter of that time, and it's been given a nice modern sheen in as much as it runs at very smooth frame rates. It's probably 60 FPS, if not higher, I suspect, on some consoles, but on the Switch, you're beginning at 60 frames per second, and it just looks dumb and fun. We also got some announcements about the Nintendo Switch Online this week, and I don't mean the Nintendo 64 stuff. We'll come back to that, because that was in the Direct. We've got a separate trailer announcing some Sega, Mega Drive, Genesis, whatever you want to call it, content. We're getting Alicia Dragoon, Beyond Oasis, and Earthworm Jim from Mega Drive. When I read that, I thought, do we already have Earthworm Jim? I actually had to go and look it up. We have Earthworm Jim 2 on the SNES. This is bringing us Earthworm Jim from the Mega Drive. And when I watched that trailer, it did bring back all my nostalgic memories. Like, I remember that level. I remember doing that bit.
Yeah, Earthworm Jim 1 was the one I properly delved into, and similarly I was like, wait a minute, don't we already have this? But, you know, I guess you're console jumping to complete the Earthworm Jim saga on Nintendo Switch, but nevertheless, yeah, I'm trying to think, Alyssa Dragoon is alright, and yeah, Beyond Oasis, that one's alright. I quite like the kind of top-down, it's got some really kind of big and large sprites in it, so the graphics are quite popping, but Earthworm Jim is where it's at, an absolute classic, and my god, I know they're making another Earthworm Jim for the Intellivision Amico. What a waste. Come on, Nintendo Switch. It's where it's meant to be.
I couldn't agree with you more. Alright, let's talk about Void Point LLC and Slipgate Ironworks, who have announced Phantom Fury for the Nintendo Switch, published by 3D Realms. It's a fast-paced retro shooter, coming out in 2023. And by retro, I mean it looks like the worst version of retro to me. This looks like it would have been a really good-looking game on the N64, or a really bad-looking game on the GameCube, and it doesn't really know where it's sitting, and let's just ignore the controversy of the developer in the first place. What do you make of this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of flip-flopped going through the trailer. This is a kind of sequel to, I believe, Ion Fury, which was very much a N64 PS1 shooter, with modern controls, with, you know, the 3D Realms heritage there. It was a really good title, incredibly well reviewed. Phantom Fury is, as you say, it's in the kind of awkward middle ground there. They've definitely improved the graphics from Ion Fury, but the result of that is it kind of looks less polished. It seems less deliberate now, which kind of puts it in an awkward spot. You know, there's moments when, you know, behind the camera shooting guns and they're kind of very polygonal guns. But then there's like shots when you're looking at, you know, characters in the world. And it's like, that just, you know, that looks downgraded. That doesn't look like a PS1 game. That's, as you say, a GameCube game almost on the poorer end of the spectrum. It's a bit uncanny, and especially once it's zoomed out and they've got a lot of stuff going on there. A bit odd. outside of the kind of visual aesthetic, I recommend giving the trailer a look and making up your own mind of whether or not it passed the Uncanny Valley test for yourself. The gameplay looks fun. It's very much kind of Quake meets Duke Nukem. It's fast, but kind of in a kind of Metropolis-esque setting. I would need to go and try Iron Fury first, as that game's already well regarded, but this game is just sitting in an odd spot for me at the moment.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, I mean, it's got an interesting engine behind it, because there is, as well as the first-person shooting, there's flying, there's driving, there's a few different elements to it. I mean, technically speaking, it's probably got some quite solid roots in there. It just looks odd, very odd. But, as Anton says, go and check it out, make up your own mind, let us know what you think. You can do so by, you may as well wedge in our communication stuff. Go find us on Twitter, which is at NSUKpodcast, or email me, podcast@nsukp.co.uk. Okay, let's move on. SanDisk, they don't make games, they make memory cards. So let's talk about them instead. They are expanding their line of micro SD cards now by bringing in a Fortnite design in both 128 and 256 gigabyte configurations, which is quite fun, I suppose.
Yep. You know, they're a normal micro SD card, you know, I guess given the thumbs up that it'll run well on the Nintendo Switch, but to be honest, even the most basic modern micro SD cards that you can buy from SanDisk at a retailer, obviously they'll have older ones that won't do the job, but the modern ones that they sell, near all of them work perfectly fine for it, so you're just getting a cool logo. I think this is very much just for, you know, video game stores and parents to just know that it will work, no worries, and it's got a cool little Nintendo Switch logo on it to kind of give you the thumbs up and a little Fortnite icon. So tiny, and you'd be paying a premium, so don't go out of your way for these if you know what you're looking for.
Unless you're a collector. I know we have at least one collector in our Patreon Discord, because we've seen pictures of their collection arranged alphabetically, which did, I have to say, please me quite a bit until someone pointed out it wasn't quite alphabetical, and that spurred quite a lot of fun and discussion and debate, actually. And if you do want to join our Patreon, I'm doing a great job wedging this stuff in, you can do so by going to nsukp.co.uk/support-us. We talk about it every week. We won't go into great detail here. If you really want to find out, go look at the website and support us, and we appreciate it. Let's talk about Haze Light, who have announced... No, that's not what we talked about. We're going to come back to them. That was in the direct. I'm reading the wrong bits of our notes. Toby Fox. Let's talk about Toby Fox instead, because we like Toby Fox, don't we?
Indeed, yeah. You know, he's done a little title you might have heard of, Undertale. It's popping off slowly.
Yeah, something like that. Well, he promised us an update this week, and he delivered. So he has shared updates on Deltarune. He says he's got a small team now working on chapters 3, 4, and 5 of Deltarune simultaneously, but more work has been done on chapters 3 and 4. They're further along. He's also shared various screenshots and gifts. So we got quite a bit from him this week.
Indeed, you know, I think he did an excellent PR job of, you know, before the anniversary of Undertale / Deltarune, because they were released on the same day, prefacing that it's not coming out this year. Don't get your hopes up too much. But honestly, this is a good update. I think, you know, there was such a gap between Deltarune Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. There was a slight fear that, you know, with that kind of gap, that, you know, if he's going ahead and doing 3, 4, and 5 at once, it would be a much longer gap. But now that there's a team behind it, and progress is moving along, you know, they've got an established style in the engine, because part of the reason for that delay between Chapter 1 and 2 was a switch from one engine to another. I'm very excited, and I'm just glad that it's going to be released as one complete package. You know, we're not piecemealing it anymore, because especially when there is a gap, it can you can just forget what's going on, you know? It's like a TV show, but you have to wait months for episodes.
Oh, totally. It can be frustrating, particularly when you've got my memory. I'm terrible at remembering these things. But it's just nice to know that he's getting enough money in from the sale of these games that he can afford to employ a team, which is wonderful. I mean, the game has been highly successful. It's not a big surprise, and you would hope that this might lead him on to starting some bigger things, some new things. But who knows? Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Let's just wait for chapters 3, 4, and 5 to come out, and then start getting ahead of ourselves. Okay, let's move on to talk about Overwatch 2, which came out on the 4th of October. Blizzard made, well, what sounded to me like a slightly bizarre announcement, but maybe you can explain it. They said they're shutting down the servers for Overwatch 1 roughly a day before. Huh? Why?
Yeah, so from what we were seeing, it's a bit peculiar because Overwatch 2 is going to have a lot of the same skeleton as Overwatch 1. It's going to be a lot of the same game modes, a lot of the same characters, all the same weapons. It's going to be greatly expanded on it. And then there's going to be a new kind of PvE game mode along as with it. But it seems like to kind of wire up Overwatch 1 and 2 with the intention being that you can play multiplayer in the kind of core competitive multiplayer, you can play that in both Overwatch 1 and 2. But if you play it in Overwatch 2, you have better graphics. If you play it in Overwatch 1, you've got your old Overwatch 1 graphics. Very odd situation there, but seems like just a day before Overwatch 2 comes out, they're going to have to shut it down and basically replumb it back up for this very bizarre situation of coexistent entries in a franchise that are intercompatible. It's unprecedented, but Overwatch 2 will be a free-to-play game, so it'll be nice to give it a wee go once it arrives.
I wonder how many people will. I suspect a lot, because many people played the first one. They really enjoyed it. I'm curious to know how many people are still playing it. It sort of feels like Fortnite overtook it and stole all of its glory, but maybe that was just the 12-year-olds. Maybe there's a lot of older people who are still playing Overwatch. I have no idea. You remember the last time you heard anyone talk about it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I feel like when Overwatch 2 was announced, there was a lot of hype, but as you say, everything's went battle royale, and it kind of doesn't really matter what flavor of gamer you are. You know, we've got Apex, we've got Call of Duty, we have Fortnite itself, we have PUBG. It's a very crowded space, so it'll be interesting to see if we can get a little bit of resurgence in the team-based shooter arena.
Let's see. Okay, well, we're going to talk about a game that I think it's a fan favourite. It's definitely a podcast favourite. It's been talked about since, I think, episode 1, probably even before we started recording, and that is Persona 5. So Atlus has announced Persona 5 Royal, but we knew that. What they've announced is Persona 5 Royal One More Edition, featuring a treasure chest, which is kind of cool. You get an art frame, you get art prints, you get a briefcase bag, you get tarot cards, yes, tarot cards, you get steelbook, and the physical game for the pricely sum of $119.99. There's also a launch edition featuring the steelbook, which is just $59.99. That's not actually that bad. We've seen much, much worse prices out there, but who's buying it? I mean, I imagine Mike will, but who else?
Yeah, this is it's going to be a tough one for this collector's edition. I think this is definitely on the more value-rich side than we've seen in a while for these kind of big box collector's editions. And I kind of understand that. You know, the most diehard Persona 5 fans, or even just Persona fans generally, will have already bought it on PS4 and PS3 when it came out. They will have the nice collector's editions from that release. So, you know, there'll be a fresh wave of people that will, you know, dive in head first and get the new collector's edition. But yeah, it's kind of interesting having a collector's edition for a game that's been out for so long. Usually when there's a later port, it's usually kind of a bit of a more just basic, you know, we put a box in your retail store. So hopefully this does well. I believe it's available at Atlus's official online store, so if you're interested, do check it out.
Absolutely. One of these days I really should try out a Persona game. I've never played one yet. Although having watched the trailer for 5, I am curious, I have to say. They do look pretty good. But maybe another day. Okay, let's talk about the Direct. As we mentioned at the start, it was huge. We're not going to cover all that again. If you want to go and cover it, go listen to the special. It's out there. It's very easy to find. It's in the RSS feed. It's on the website. We're going to quickly go through an abridged version of really the highlights, I think. So the Direct opened pretty strongly, particularly in some people's eyes. Intelligent Systems announced Fire Emblem Engage for the Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo. It's a modern tactical turn-based RPG, the latest in the series. It's coming out on the 20th of January. And I think excitement levels shot up for many people around the globe at that point.
Indeed. You know, this is a franchise that's been going from shrimp to shrimp, from Awakening, Free Hopes, or Free Houses rather. And now we have the newest entry, which looks to be giving it the largest budget ever and really just is a Fire Emblem game on a scale we've never seen before. It's quite exciting to see.
Exactly. It looks really, really cool. Then we got Haze Light announcing It Takes Two for the Nintendo Switch, published by EA. Two-player co-op puzzle game adventure, which is featuring, features free friend pass, which I took to mean you don't need Nintendo Online to play this. That's how I read that. Coming out on the 4th of November. It's already been out on other platforms. Very, very well reviewed. And I agree with you guys in your main show. It looks really good.
Indeed, it is going to be lovely. It was Game of the Year for 2021 from the Video Game Awards. And the free friend pass is that you only need to own one copy of the game and then you can give a free pass to a buddy so they can join your game.
That is awesome and interesting and unique. I like that a lot. Okay, Koei Tecmo Games, they've announced Project Zero, Mask of the Lunar Eclipse for Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo again. This one was a Japanese survival horror title focusing on surviving supernatural events, coming out in 2023. Again, it's a sequel. We've got a couple of them in the series. It's just the latest installment, and it looked pretty good, albeit I will not be playing this.
Indeed, it is one of the most spooky. As you use your camera, you can use your camera to see ghosts, but you're limited by the battery life of your camera. It's kind of very much a classic version of you have limited battery life in your flashlight, but elevating that to a new way where you can still kind of move around a lot easier when your flashlight's dead, as you're just moving around the world ghostless, but they're still there.
Totally. Up next, we had, well, let's face them, I'm going to call them the attention-seeking Square Enix because they pretty much dominated the entire Direct. I think every game that wasn't Nintendo was Square Enix. They announced, rather surprisingly, Octopath Traveler 2 for the Switch. Self-published, coming out in, it's a 2D HD RPG, just like the previous one, coming out on the 24th of February next year. I don't think anyone was expecting that, were they?
No, yeah. It's quite amazing that a team that can't make a logo for a video game made another one, which I must say, although I'm very cynical on the original Octopath Traveler because I really didn't enjoy it, this one does look really good. You know, the 2D HD art style was the defining part of that title in my eyes, and what they've done here is the scope of it just looks so much like larger. You know, with the original Octopath Traveler, you know, you could kind of go from like the top and bottom of your screen, and that was the amount of depth. But now you can just go near infinitely forward in your screen, and the world's just far more expansive and alive. And I'm very impressed by how they've been able to elevate this 2D HD art style that they've kind of developed for themselves. And unlike the original Octopath Traveler and Project Triangle and Alive Alive, those ones felt like they were designed like a classic kind of 2D sprite-based RPG. This one feels like it's been built from the ground up with this 2D HD art style, as it has been, and has taken leverage of that in a bunch of kind of impressive ways.
It was very cool. We then got a game that I spent the entire trailer going, why? This looks awful. Why would anyone play this? Why would anyone buy it? And that came courtesy of IndieZero. They announced Theatre Rhythm Final Bar Line for Nintendo Switch, published by Square Enix. It's a rhythm game featuring 384 Final Fantasy songs, coming out on the 16th of February. Who likes the Final Fantasy songs that much? Really?
Yeah, and you can get like collector's deluxe editions that pop that up to the high 500s. There's going to be expansion packs that add games from the Zaga, Octopath Traveler, and a couple other RPGs. And yeah, I feel like this one is, they've made a very, very basic rhythm game. It's so simple. You know, it was the Theatre Rhythm games, although I really love it on the 3DS, you know, had the touchscreen to kind of dazzle it up. But on Nintendo Switch, is a little bit bare bones, and I think they counterbalance that by just adding sheer content to this title.
I just took this as being self-important backslapping. Oh, look at the wonderful music we did. We love it. We spent so much time and money making this music. You will buy this game. No, no, we won't. It's background music that's bleh. I mean, it's fine, but it's not something you want to play. I got really annoyed watching this one. Can you tell?
But nevertheless, thankfully, we did have a palate cleanser as we returned just after this to your favorite console of all time. Am I correct in saying?
We did. We got a whole flurry of games being announced for the Nintendo Switch Online and Nintendo 64 expansion pass, whatever you want to call it. We got Pilot Wing 64. Had it and loved it. We got Mario Party. We got Mario Party 2. We got Mario Party 3. That's a lot of party goodness. I can't wait. We then got Pokemon Stadium, Pokemon Stadium 2, 1080 Snowboarding, which I also hadn't loved, and Excitebike 64. I mean, they were great. I was very, very happy. And then they did the one more thing. And my heart stopped, and all of a sudden I got all excited, and I felt the need to message the Discord going, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, GoldenEye was announced. Not just GoldenEye, GoldenEye was online play. I can't wait. We didn't get any visuals of it. We saw no gameplay, but I was still ecstatic and bouncing around the room and beside myself with joy.
Indeed, I am just so excited to be able to play this classic once again with a proper controller. The multiplayer online, reconnecting with people, it is just such a fundamental classic of first-person games. And I think, you know, a lot of credit gets given to, you know, Doom and Quake. And I think the importance on GoldenEye and being a stepping stone in kind of consolizing that experience, which other games would then iterate upon, is very much underappreciated. And who doesn't love the multiplayer? It's classic.
It is classic. To be fair, it's the first-person shooter I ever got on with. I didn't like Doom and Quake and stuff because I wasn't good enough. They didn't rock my boat. They didn't work for me. Whereas GoldenEye, on the easy setting, which I usually played it on, I think I made it maybe up to medium at one point, it was a much slower-paced game. It wasn't like anything that existed. It was slow, deliberate, accurate. You could basically plan. It wasn't plow you with your hordes of demons. It was take a beat, hide, come out and shoot, drop a landmine. It was just all creative, and it used the Bond license, which everyone loves. And I'm just so impressed that they managed to make this happen, because there's so many different IP bits going on around here with Rare and Microsoft and Metro Golden Mayer. And I mean, I think in the direct you mentioned they'd been bought over by Amazon, which you thought maybe had a play part in this. Just so many moving parts, and they've made it happen, and I'm happy. We then got our old friend Shigeru came on. It was Shigeru, wasn't it?
Shigeru Miyamoto, indeed, yeah.
Yeah. I was suddenly doubting myself there. I was thinking, was it Shigeru? Yes, it was. He came on and he announced Pikmin 4, which was a bit of a surprise. I mean, we knew it'd be made for years and years and years. They sort of said it existed, I think, when we first launched the Switch, but they finally got it, and it looks like they've done a lot of work on it in between, because the game looked gorgeous.
Indeed, you know, it's very exciting where I think, despite being the passion project of Miyamoto and having such a drive behind Nintendo, and, you know, it sold well, but it's not on the level of the other Nintendo big IPs. But what I got the impression from here, from how they described the kind of different approach to game design they're taking with this one, the change of perspective, is I get the impression that this is the Pikmin game that could be taking the franchise to the next level in a way that Fire Emblem Awakening took Fire Emblem to the next level. I think this is going to be quite an important game for the franchise. And the fact that, you know, there's been so many games and they're still calling it Pikmin with a number after it, so dumb. I just like when games have numbers. I'm done with subtitles.
There's something very pleasing about a number. I just love the fact that they've just taken a Pikmin game and thought about it a lot, down to the point where they changed the camera perspective. They brought you down to Pikmin's level. Instead of looking down on them as, like, not quite a god, but you're much, much lower. You see the world in a completely different way, more akin actually to the little Pikmin shorts that we got. Remember the animated shorts that were released a while ago? they were kind of Pikmin level views, and this is really picking that up and taking it with them. I thought it looked really, really good. It's coming out in 2023, so we've not got that far to wait. We then got HAL Laboratories announcing Kirby Return to Dream Land Deluxe for the Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo. It's a remake of the Wii 2D platformer, coming out on the 24th of February, and I'm so happy. It just looks lovely. It looks wonderful, and Kirby games have always been lovely little games, and this one was definitely one of the better ones.
Indeed, you know, it's very delightful that we've got a far more solid 2D Kirby experience on Nintendo Switch. Star Allies is a very good game. However, it's a bit content light, and I think comparison to Return to Dreamland, it's just not, you know, Return to Dreamland's just the better title. And to be able to play this game that was a bit of a late era Wii game in HD now without a Wii remote, I'm delighted, and I'm quite excited to give this one a wee go when it launches February 2023.
Indeed. And then they wrapped it up. It's a shame we didn't hear anything about Zelda, isn't it? I mean, I would love to have heard something about a sequel to Breath of the Wild 2. Oh, wait, oh, no, hold on, no. There was just one more thing. And we did get a bit of an update on the sequel to Breath of the Wild 2. We have a name and a bit of gameplay footage. So the name has been revealed. If you've not heard it, then where have you been? It's going to be The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, coming out, self-published, 12th of May next year. They've given us a date, which is fun.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Still in my head, I'm just going over the name of the game. I'm like, Tears of the Kingdom, yes. Because I just, for years, have been like, in my head, thinking it was going to be something wild. But nope, they threw me for a curveball. No, I remember when they unveiled it, it was very much like, oh, this is maybe why they delayed this conference in the UK. But, you know, it makes a little bit more sense now for that lens. But overall, the game looks absolutely stunning. Incredibly excited to see it. Just as soon as they let me pre-order it, I'm there. I'm just everything. Alistair, this is the one I would buy a new Switch for. This is the one I'd buy limited edition Joy-Cons for. I have only trust and money to throw at this game.
It's going to be good. There's no question about it. It is going to be amazing. And if it isn't, then there will be tears around the world, not just in the kingdom. Because it is such a hyped game. There's a lot of pressure on their shoulders here. I'm fascinated to see where the story goes. Tears of the Kingdom suggests great sorrow and suffering. And I mean, what could be worse than Ganon taking over the whole kingdom and his mobs running crazy? And just, it was pretty bad before.
Indeed.
What's happening now?
Yeah, I'm especially fascinated where, you know, we've kind of got another Majora's Mask situation here. You know, for many, many Zelda games, the fundamental, the basic thing it needs to do is, you need to go save Princess Zelda, you need to fight Ganon. That's the fundamentals of a Zelda game. And to be honest, basically, Breath of the Wild did the exact same thing with coating of innovative gameplay. But now that it's went past that, in the same way that Majora's Mask went past, you know, the world is, you know, open to interpretation. They could do absolutely anything. You know, it can go off in any direction. They have full creative freedom. And, you know, that allows them to lean, I guess, a little bit more into the fact of, you know, it can be a story built around the fundamental gameplay in the world that they built for themselves in this adaptation rather than the core fundamentals of a Zelda story. I'm very excited to see what they do in that dimension.
Oh, so much scope. It will be really good. We'll actually come back to that game later on in, I think, Turbo Mode, we mentioned it. So bear with us. Just hold that one in your memory. Lastly, we then got a Japan-only N64 game, Harvest Moon, coming out in N64 online in 2023. Why do only Japan get that?
Yeah, sadly, it was not a game that was, I believe, localized. So it's a real shame that they didn't take the opportunity to localize it at this beat. Nevertheless, if you are interested in giving it a wee go, there are methods for getting Japanese-ish Nintendo Switch Online games on your European or American accounts without having to buy a separate subscription. So do have a little wee Google there. And that is just an abridged version of what was covered at the Direct, picking out some key favourites for ourselves and team. So if you're interested, do check out the full Nintendo Direct special. It's got Mike, it's an hour long, and my God, there was a lot of farming games.
So many farming games and so many RPGs and so much Square Enix. Anyway, yeah, go check it out. We didn't just have the one games announcement show thing this week, because we also had the Tokyo Game Show going on, where we got some more gameplay trailer released of Sonic Frontiers, which premiered, well, a yellow kind of golden flashy Super Sonic, Anton.
Indeed. So the modern Sonic games have gone into a bit of a rut of basically, you know, the Chaos Emeralds are important to the story, but you never get to play as Super Sonic. This one is fulfilling that kind of gaming fantasy of being the Super Saiyan version of Sonic. It was also interesting, they did show off some gameplay of the Nintendo Switch version of Sonic Frontiers, and although compromised, it's running pretty smoothly. The game's managed to scale down surprisingly well, so another game, we keep on hearing updates on it. They've done a really good job of keeping this game in the news cycle. They've done well, Sega.
They really have. That is a proper constant drip of news we've been getting. It's really quite impressive. I am beginning to echo your sentiment of worrying that the landscape looks a bit barren, but then only some of the scenes look barren. Some of the other ones actually look pretty good, so maybe it's a deliberate design choice. But let's move on and talk about Future Labs, who announced Power Washer Simulator for the Nintendo Switch, published by Square Enix. No date for it. You like this game because you played it on other platforms, haven't you?
Indeed. It is just a beautiful game. It is equivalent to having one of those little Japanese Zen gardens. Rather than kind of taking a rake through some sand, you're slowly and methodically cleaning a building, a vehicle, a spaceship, and there's also a weird lore about the kind of destruction of the world. It is a beautiful game, and the fundamental gameplay is just so kind of mind-absorbing and hypnotizing. It's so well done. It's too well done. It shouldn't be as good as it is. I'm not the only one. I swear it's a good video game.
Gotta say, it's a good trailer. It's very, very funny. It's very tongue-in-cheek, does not take itself seriously, which wins me over every single time. Next up, Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection is going to feature online battles for every single game in the collection, and chip trading will be supported via online. What does that mean, Anton?
Yeah, so the original Battle Network games spread out across a couple consoles, most noticeably the GameCube and Nintendo DS. And through that, you could connect up, I believe, on the GameCube version, you could hook up Game Boy Advances, and then DSs you could trade between devices on their own. There was these chips, I believe, in it, and you could also kind of do kind of network multiplayer. I believe they really encourage that degree of kind of interconnectivity that, you know, a Pokemon encourages. And they've done a lot of work here to kind of take it beyond the kind of bare minimum that was expected of them, which I'm remarkably impressed that they've put in this effort for what fundamentally is probably one of the lower tier Mega Man, or as you say, Battle Man franchises.
I mean, I'm pleased we're getting this. It's kind of cool, I guess. Doesn't really make me want to go and buy the games anymore, but sure, why not? Let's then move on to talk about Konami, who announced the games that I cannot pronounce, and despite me spending a whole, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes on the internet trying to find how to pronounce them, I still have no idea. The trailers are all silent. They show you the title, they don't tell you the title. But Konami announced Suikoden, something like that, Suikoden, 1 and 2 HD Remaster, Gate, Rune and Junin Unification, which is a stupidly long name, coming out in 2023. It's a classic JRPG remake. And Anton, what have you got to say about it?
Yeah, so they've kind of went for, I kind of, it sounds bad, but a poor man's adaptation of Square Enix 2D HD style. You know, it is sprite-based graphics of the original with a little bit of more lighting, shadows, and bloom, basically. These are classic games, delightful to get them. They're kind of PS1 late-era JRPGs. And they're solid games. It's nice to have them as remasters. Hopefully they don't overly charge for it. Not a title for myself, but they've done a competent job putting this together, and it's nice that they've went a little bit above a bond, a little bit above and beyond of just kind of putting these two games in the collection. They've done a good remaster here, I think.
I think this, I'd agree. The remaster looks pretty good. The graphics have been updated. It looks crisp. It looks fine. It looks absolutely fine. Considering it's the remake of an old game or an HD remaster of an old game, it looks fine. If you have any love for it, I'm sure you're probably quite excited. For those of us who don't even know how to pronounce it, it's not really registering on my radar as go and check this out. We then got a 20-minute gameplay trailer of Octopath Traveler 2. That was a lot of Octopath Traveler 2, Anton, and it really fleshed out what we saw in the Nintendo Direct.
Indeed, you know, it is very much amazing how a game that I absolutely did not like is being able to impress me. It's like the 180 of the century, but what they showed here looked really good. It's slightly less medieval, there's more colour, the combat looks a little bit more involved. I'm very smitten. I think they've done a good job here. I think Square Enix have leveled up Octopath Traveler two times. They're cool.
Well done. Okay, we've got through a lot of content. We have talked about much, but we're not finished yet because we still have Turbo Mode to go.
Yes.
Pokemon Stadium 1 and 2 for the Nintendo 64 and Nintendo Switch Online will not support Pokemon trading. Sony has released their State of Play event. They announced their State of Play event the same day as the Nintendo Direct. Harumph, how dare they? It's almost like they weren't talking to each other. Star Trek's Mr. Spock, Aliens Xenomorph, and Hatsune Miku? I'm probably butchered it. Anyway, they're Johnny Fall guys. Then we've got Nintendo Switch. They shared the box art of The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. Octopath Traveler, the original, not the second one, because it's not out yet, has sold more than 3 million copies. Interestingly, Toby Fox is going to be replacing Masahiro Sakurai in Famitsu's column. The feature will be called Tony Fox's Secret Base. That should be fun. The protagonists from Fire Emblem Engage were designed by Mika Picazzo, known for designing various VTubers. Make of that what you will. Then we've got Miyamoto's Pikmin t-shirt. It's available! You can buy it at Nintendo's New York City store. And then finally, Sakurai, that's Masahiro Sakurai, in case you're not on first name, surname terms with him, or single name, you know what I'm trying to get at. He's got a million Twitter followers. That's a lot of good news in there, Anton.
Indeed. It was, I think, very interesting to see. You know, people like to make comparisons the best of time, but having the State of Play and Nintendo Direct on the same day was interesting to have people making comparisons. It's like, you know, where the different platform allegiances come from in terms of fanboys and fangirls. You know, you have one people, set of people being like, yeah, God of War, very cool, and other people being like, hell yeah, Pikmin. And on the other side, you know, it's so dumb. The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom box art is the most gorgeous box art I've ever seen. I might be a little bit biased. I'm so excited for that game. My God, they've made art. And yeah, I think Mika has done an incredible job with the new characters for Fire Emblem. I've seen people making fun of them as like Colgate, which kind of, I do agree with them, but they're distinctive, and that's more than I can say for most anime protagonists. You know, if they added them to the new Smash Bros, whenever that comes out in a bazillion years time, I'd be like, oh, I know which ones those are from, which I can't say for a lot of the characters from Smash Bros, sadly, which is so odd because it used to be so distinctive, but all these franchises are starting to look a little same, and Fire Emblem Engage looks unique, Alistair.
It really does. It does. So, I've got to talk about the box art as well. It does, you're right. It looks beautiful. It doesn't give a whole lot away. It largely is focused on exactly what we've seen gameplay-wise. That is Link on a floating island. We can jump off. We can see many floating islands in the background. Interestingly, when you look down, there's a whole lot of sort of mountains and volcanoes with things coming out of them. I can't decide if they're supposed to be tentacles, which I don't think they are, or eruptions, or it looks a bit to me like Ganon's kind of wispy, tentacly type thing. Don't know. I forgot what it was called in the game, but it's reminiscent of that. A whole lot of flying birds. It does. It looks gorgeous. It's very, very nice. It gives a really nice sense of scale, height, nice texture to it. Good piece of artwork. Very good piece of artwork. And I'm just super psyched that Mr. Spock is coming, finally, to Fall Guys. I've played Fall Guys once at Mike's. I've still not downloaded it. I really should. It's free to play. Why have I not gone and got it?
And you were
playing Mr. Spock.
You were so good at it, Alistair. You didn't even...
I was.
Well, you could become an esports entrepreneur, and you've just letting the people get ahead of you.
I know. I mean, maybe it was beginner's luck, but I like to think I'm just awesome and amazing, and that's all it is. And I don't know how I feel about the Pokemon Stadium 1 and 2 not supporting Pokemon Transfer. I get why. I mean, it would be a ridiculously complicated technical thing to try and implement now with an online version of it. People not really having these games anymore. They had an opportunity, I guess, to tie it into Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, but they're both old enough games that people maybe don't have them. I get why they've not done it. Maybe if they build a new Pokemon Stadium, then we might get these tie-ins, but I can forgive them for not bringing it to the N64 version. That's probably all I want to talk about in there, to be honest. I think it was just a lovely little list of news. It's been a very packed week. We've had much to talk about, Anton. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I think we're good. And yeah, it's a particularly odd week that, yeah, we didn't have any rumours this week. People really tried, but there was a lot of stuff where I was like, nah, you have nothing to base that on. Everybody's basically being like, yeah, they're going to make a new Switch and the Zelda will be exclusive. So there you go. That's like all 20 rumours that happened this week.
We don't need rumours. We had so much news and so many announcements. We just don't need the rumours. They can just wait for another week when we've got less to talk about.
Speaking
frankly, of them. Go away.
Rumours. Where is Twilight Princess HD? Where is Wind Waker HD? And where's Metroid? Those are ones we just keep on hearing about. And they keep on getting kicked down the road. It's amazing.
It's okay. We've got so much content this time around. We can wait.
We got
although I do still stand by my rating for the Direct. I know, although I wasn't on the Direct special, I did text Mike my rating halfway through, towards the end of it. And I think I still stand by it. Mike wanted to give it, he wanted to give it 5 out of 10. He upgraded it to 7 out of 10. I think you gave it 7.5?
Yeah.
And I give it 6.5. And even after going through it, I still stand by that because as a Direct, I think it was okay. There were some gems in there. Breath of the Wild was brilliant. Wasn't you. There was nothing really in it that excited me enough that I felt I should put it up there. GoldenEye was brilliant, but it's an old game. Pikmin was brilliant, but we've known about it for ages. Breath of the Wild 2 or Tears of the Kingdom, whatever you want to call it, again, we've known about it for a while. Everything else in there, with the exception of Fire Emblem Engage, which I understand a lot of people are very excited about but doesn't really do much for me, there was nothing in there that I thought was amazing, and there was so much Square Enix filler. I felt that just ruined the whole overall Direct, so I'm still sticking by my 6.5.
Yeah.
You changing yours? Are you still happy? You're 7.5.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I went through the content a couple of times and at first I didn't like it. And then when I went through it to make the notes, I became more positive. And I think there's an element of critically, I think it was a very good Direct and there's a lot of new entries and an exciting franchise and a lot of exciting teams. Personally, a little less so. There's less that I was interested in, and I completely agree that Square Enix must have a partnership with Nintendo for these Directs, because the Directs are becoming so bloated with a lot of Square Enix games. And, you know, a lot of them, I think, are natural fits and make sense. First Mission 1, 2, and 3 shouldn't have been in two Directs. They shouldn't have even been in an indie Direct. And they're not even developing it. They're only just publishing it. So I think there's definitely a tie there because there's been a lot of games that have been published by Square Enix that don't have any place in a Nintendo Direct.
Could not agree more. Well, if you have thoughts on the matter, you can drop us a message. If you're a patron, jump on the Discord, let us know what you think. If you're not a patron, you can email podcast@nsukp.co.uk or you can message us on Twitter @nsukpodcast. Have we put up any reviews this weekend, Tom, on YouTube? I don't think we have we?
Not this week. There is a decent back catalogue there, so if you haven't checked it out, do give that a go. That is NSUK Podcasts, and that also applies for our Twitter, Facebook, and yeah, check out NSUK Podcasts.
Indeed. I don't think there's anything further to add, so on that note, I'm going to sign off and say cheerio.
Au revoir.